in association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. On this edition of Word Balloon, we take a moment to reflect on the art and life of Michael Turner with his friend and collaborator, writer Jeff Loeb. Turner was the co-creator of Witchblade for Top Cow and went on to create two books, Fathom and Soulfire, that became the foundation of his own company, Aspen. On June 27th, Mike passed away due to complications from his battles with bone cancer. There have been a lot of tributes posted all across the internet regarding Michael Turner, and we wanted to talk to somebody that did work close with him. Jeff helped make Mike's script for the first arc in the Soulfire series, and also chose Mike to be the artist on the Superman-Batman story, The Girl from Krypton, which reintroduced Supergirl to the DCU. We talk about the work they did together, the planned projects that didn't happen, and Mike's special friendship with Jeff's son, Sam, who suffered from the same type of bone cancer. According to Jeff, Sam found solace and strength through conversations with Mike and his examples in dealing with the treatments of their shared illness. We'll also talk to Jeff about what he's been doing in the Ultimate Universe, and with Heroes coming back this fall, NBC has released some web episodes this week, and Jeff gives us a special preview of that as well. This episode of Word Balloon is sponsored by InStockTrades.com, where amidst the hardbacks, trade paperbacks, essentials, archives, and omnibus editions, you can find Soulfire Volume 1 from Aspen Comics by Michael Turner, Jeff Loeb, and J.T. Kroll for just $10.49, or the trade paperback version of the Supergirl story from Superman Batman, that's Volume 2 of Superman Batman, for just $8.18. Don't forget, at InStockTrades.com, orders over $50 get free shipping. And don't forget about their sister site, too, Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com for all your pre-order needs. Major publishers have monthly books with discounts ranging from 35 to 75% off every month. For more details and more deals, visit InStockTrades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com.
Are we ready to roll?
Sure.
Yeah, you're always, I can catch you, you know, coming out of the shower and you're ready to go. You're that kind of guy.
That's it. In fact, let's just tell everybody right from the top, I'm getting out of the shower.
Excellent. I'm imagining your hair is like Larry Fine right now from the Three Stooges.
If that's, I know who Larry Fine is. Thank you. Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, Dr. Howard.
Well, dude, I'm sorry to start things off on a sad note. It's been a couple weeks, but I'm sure it's on a lot of people's minds still, the loss of Michael Turner and your relationship with him. I wanted to talk to you because you're one of those guys that, you know, I know was very close to him and worked a lot with him. One of the projects that immediately jumped out to me is the Girl from Krypton, the Superman-Batman story that reintroduced Supergirl to the DCU. But I want to start at the beginning in terms of how did you guys meet?
I don't really remember. I'm sure it was a poker game. Because I met so many guys around that time period. I remember that when Rob Liefeld asked me to come to work on Heroes Reborn, it was such a huge step in my career, which is one of the reasons why I think you and I have talked about before that I will always remain loyal to Rob, because he had no reason to sort of bring me into the inner circle. And we're also talking about, it was like 1995.
Okay.
When, although Image didn't have the same kind of power, there certainly were a group of people, Jim Lee being at the front of that. But I remember going to this poker game down in San Diego where Mike was there and Jessica Campbell was there, Alex Garner was there, and Jim. And it was like a big deal to get invited to this poker game, because it basically said that, you know, you were at the top of your game. And I well, certainly wasn't at the top of my game. I don't know that I'm ever at the top of my game. And so I just remember going in there and not really knowing any of them. And on top of which, as anyone will tell you, I don't really know how to play poker either. So I basically remember starting the evening off, had $300 in my pocket. I put it in the pot and said, okay, I'm done. Because I'll just save myself the time. I've already lost the money. And I just remember that out of everybody there, Mike was just so incredibly gracious, and you know, and it was just sort of, you know, hey, dude, whatever you need, kind of. I think if I actually had lost, he would have looked at me and said, "It's okay, just you can take your money back." Jim, on the other hand, I think would have put a knife through my hand if I had actually reached into the pot. So anyway, I think that was sort of the beginning. I remember that the time that we first, you know, had to deal with each other was that we were at Awesome, where, you know, I was the publisher and Rob was, I guess, the owner. I can't remember what Rob's title was. I guess he was the president. And we were just having so much fun. And our finance guy, who ultimately betrayed us and tried to steal the company, and that was, is, I think you and I have already talked about this. I'm going to keep saying that you and I have already talked about it, and we'll just we'll have people going, when did they talk?
Yeah.
Did I miss something last week?
Yeah, there's 10 hours of the Loeb's tapes to pour through, I think. So yeah.
Yes, there is. which in fairness, Joe Pekaski, who works at Heroes, I guess has no life because he's now started to listen to them.
Oh, awesome.
And he quotes me periodically, and I look at him and I go, what are you talking about? And he'll just look at me and he'll say, no, I'm listening to the Loeb Report. And you have to remember it was the Loeb Report.
That's
and
right,
it was
I'm sorry.
The Bendis tapes.
Yeah, I'm sorry, my man. That's absolutely
right. Iterate.
Yeah,
you know?
Shame on
Come
me.
On.
You're right, it is. It's the Loeb Report. Shame on me.
Which, by the way, when's the next Bendis tapes? Because I have to counter whatever it is he's doing.
It's coming up in August. So, and I kind of figured that, yeah, as when I talked to Brian in, at Wizard Chicago, I'm like, you know, Jeff and I are due. And this is kind of a preamble, just as I did with Bendis. And then we'll do the full-on Loeb Report when Heroes is up and running, when Red Hulk is ramped up, everything else. So, yeah, we'll get to it.
Okay. All
Absolutely.
Right. I like, you know, Brian very, very kindly opening up the board. I'm sure it'll be much more violent this year.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, we decided to make a run at Mike.
Okay.
Because we sort of thought if we could get Mike, that would just tip the entire, you know, feeling in the industry about, I mean, we would instantly have a top 10 or a top 5 book.
Is Mike at Top Cow at this point? Or
Mike is at Top Cow, but his contract is up.
So okay.
He is fielding offers. I think he was talking to Jim at Wildstorm, and he was certainly trying to figure out whether or not he wanted to stay at Top Cow. And I remember exactly where I was. It was like at midnight. He was still drawing, and I'm driving down Sunset Boulevard, talking on what probably was one of those cell phones that looked like in Lethal Weapon 2. It was like
bricks.
As big as a car. It was in the trunk, and you sort of wound it up.
Sure.
And I was making these incredible offers. It was like $1 million an issue kind of thing. And we didn't have that kind of money. But part of it was trying to build our credibility, because I think if word had gone out that we had offered all this money, that people would know that we had that kind of money. And in the end, Mike didn't take the offer. He stayed at Top Cow.
Okay.
And I think from that point on, we just became very friendly. And when he got diagnosed with cancer, it was just unreal to me. I was like, well, what are you talking about? Like, he's like 29 years old. People don't get cancer when they're 29 years old.
Wow.
You know, he didn't smoke. He was like this champion black belt water skier kind of stuff. It was just like, you must have gotten it wrong. And then I think he showed up at a con and on crutches. And he may have not had any hair. And I still didn't really understand it. And then, you know, unfortunately, I had to find out firsthand with Sam,
yeah,
which is about 4 years later. And as incredibly personal as it is, in my heart, I really thought that Mike was going to beat it, but there wasn't any scenario in my mind that if he wasn't, that, and I was always terrified that Sam was going to have to live in a world without Mike, because then Sam would have this idea that he wasn't going to get better. And I know that's incredibly selfish, but he's my son. So when we lost Sam, I can't imagine. Mike and I never really talked about it, other than how incredibly heartbreaking it was.
Sure.
I don't think we ever really talked about the fact that it may have. I'm sure it raised the specter to Mike, but Mike never gave any indication ever that he wasn't going to beat it. Literally up to his last days, he was like, "Well, what do we do, guys?" And that was the nature of his character. He never complained. He never thought it was unfair. He just, as far as he was concerned, it was something that had to be taken care of. And he was such a good friend to my boy. It was just, he would just look at Sam and just say, we're going to beat it. It's not really a big deal. It's what we're going to do. And Sam would get so uplifted by the time that Mike would spend with him. So that really, I've always felt that anybody that was a friend of Sam's, they get a pass.
Sure, absolutely.
That I will forever make sure that they're okay.
No, I understand. Well, that's cool. I was going to ask if they had those kinds of conversations about what they were both going through, and that's good that they, that Mike was there for Sam and able to.
It was so incredibly bizarre that the kind of cancer that they had, there's only 1,000 cases of it a year.
Wow.
And so we went to the same doctors. We had the same treatments. There wasn't anything that, Mike was 4 years ahead of what Sam was doing. So, we'd look at it and we'd just say to Sam, well, look, Mike did it and he's still here. So, what's the big deal? Let's just go do it. So anyway, that's all that. But on the flip side of things, when we decided to do Superman Batman, and again, I honestly can't remember. Frank, his partner, who runs Aspen, would probably remember because he has that kind of memory. I don't. He was doing this series of covers, and he wanted me to help him develop Soulfire.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering which came first, Supergirl or Soulfire.
Well, I think they were sort of simultaneous.
Okay.
And the idea was we would do the Supergirl story, and then I would go and do Soulfire. And it was it was an out for my contract at DC to be able to do it. But it was a very different responsibility because on Soulfire I was basically helping him develop something that he had in his head.
I hear you.
It was a much different experience. And on Supergirl, well, he would have a lot of input. It was still something that I was writing, and so he had to do what my writers do, which is, try to best interpret the story that's in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to give them the things that they want to draw.
Why did you choose Mike for Supergirl? I mean, I know an obvious aesthetic thing because he draws beautiful women.
That would basically be it. And also, okay, he'd never done interiors at DC. And in fact, I've been asked, and as near as I can tell, he's never done any interiors outside of Top Cow or Aspen. And so those six issues are his legacy. We didn't know they were going to be his legacy.
Yeah.
But we wanted to bring that character back in a way that people would remember it. And so I was writing it at the same time that I was writing the first six issues.
Okay.
So I was doing it simultaneously. The truth was, I was actually at one point writing an issue for McGinnis, an issue for Turner and an issue for Carlos, because that was the way that book worked, where we were writing arcs.
Okay.
And so But it helped that I knew where it was going, so that I could do that sort of thing. I'm kind of doing that with the Hulk as well, by jumping ahead and doing stuff. So I know where McGinnis is going to be.
Okay.
But anyway, back to Mike. And just the pages were so beautiful. And then we'd done some cover stuff with Peter Steigerwall, who does Mike's color, and who I think absolutely is the best in the business. And I've worked with people that are extraordinarily talented. The only relationship that I know that is quite like that is what Tim Sale has developed with Dave Stewart. But, you know, Peter, is just Peter's doing color and the rest of us are doing something with crayons, I guess. he just has a view of how to do this. And so that partnership, I think that's one of the very sad things. Because watching Peter light up what Mike was doing and the amount of joy that that gave Mike. Mike is an extremely talented artist and graphic designer in terms of what worked. And it was all natural. He didn't really have a whole lot of, schooling or anything. He just drew.
Wow.
And it was the same kind of thing with Peter. Like, he would hand Peter something. He would not really have, a big opinion about what Peter would do. He would certainly have an opinion after Peter had done it. But it was just Peter has a vision in his head, and he would execute it brilliantly with Mike. So it was all, I became part of the Aspen family for a long time, Mike was pretty fast, too. The books came out. And at the end, he wound up giving me three pieces, one of which was I wrote in the script. I do this all the time, though. I wrote in the script, and when we're all done, I'm getting this page. But I do that all the time. And when we were done, Mike gave me the page. And I looked at him, and I went, first of all, his stuff sells for something ridiculous, like $25,000 a page. So I was like, dude, you can't give me this page. And he was like, no, I can't. And then he gave me a cover. So it was, I have the cover of the last issue.
Wow.
It has, the Kent farms burning down and Darkseid's, standing with his hands in it. And then Superman and Batman are looking very angry and grim because you actually, in that story, thought that Supergirl was dead.
Wow.
He drew women the way nobody else drew women. And there just isn't anybody that has up until this point. I don't know whether or not someone will surpass him, but he had the unique ability of being able to draw very strong and independent women who sort of invented Angelina Jolie.
No, I know what you mean. Exactly.
That kind
yes.
of incredible beauty mixed with that kind of incredible strength.
Absolutely. No, that's a great call, man. I mean, if they ever do a Fathom movie or Soulfire, I mean, that's Aspen, that's Soulfire. That's great. That's a good point. I mean, because she does. It's the eyes. It really is the eyes.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's beauty there, as you say, and strength, and also a sense of optimism on so many pages. And maybe that was the tone of the story as well, but that was the feeling I got, especially from The Girl from Krypton, was this whole world being opened up to Kara, and that was the feeling, especially when she and Clark were together, when they were just in regular civilian garb, or even when, she was, learning things before things went bad in the story.
Actually, one of my favorite moments in that, and Mike drew it wonderfully, was that, and it was one of the first things I pitched to DC when I told them the story, was that they went out on the street, and she was hungry, and so Clark bought her a hot dog, and she said, "So is this made out of a dog?" And he said, no. And then she said, well, what is it made out of? And there's sort of a beat, and then Clark looks at her and says, I don't think you really want to know. So, just in case there's hot dog fans out there, I'm actually a big fan of hot dogs. I'm not trying to diminish your love of a hot dog.
Good, because I'm this close to Armour and Oscar Mayer cutting sponsorships for me. So
yeah.
Thank you.
Hebrew
National.
I think more importantly, I just think that, people like Joe Pekaski, who's probably listening to this right now, just turned it off. Just said, I'm offended by your hot dog comment.
Now, when you worked on things like Soulfire and you've like you said, kind of helped him frame the story that he had in his head, what kind of storyteller from that standpoint was Mike?
Well, he was extraordinary. When he and I first sat down, he told me the first 12 issues. And I was sort of like, well, what do you need me for? It was very much more like the way that Stan Lee used to work with Jack Kirby, which was they would talk about what the story was in very general terms. And then Mike would start drawing or laying it out. And then he would say, so here I think there's this big, huge spread of the dragon, but I want to be able to make sure it's from the point of view of the boy. And I would just continually sort of have a sense as to where the story was. And so it was just a real collaboration. But it was Mike Turner's Soulfire. It wasn't Mike Turner and Jeff Loeb's Soulfire.
I hear you.
And then I would do a dialogue pass. And again, Mike would go through it and go, well, I don't think that person would say that. And I don't like really anybody do that. And so it was, it was the nature of the beast. It was amazing to look at, and knowing where the story was going was kind of thrilling. I think more importantly, being part of Aspen, and I'm sure other people will tell you this, it's just a real family place. That's part of Mike's personality. Everything grew from that. The expression, which is the fish stinks from the head down. In Mike's case, the fish was really sweet from the head down. And so everybody that worked there, at least in my experience, I couldn't see a world where anyone had a cross word with anybody or... I never saw Mike get mad. It may just be that I wasn't there, but he was very strong-willed, and he very definitely had an idea as to the way things had to be. But, I just don't think that he or Frank or Peter or any of the guys there, I would go to dinner with them in San Francisco or in San Diego, and it was just, it was like going out with your brothers. And I remember, and this is not really a Mike memory, but we were in Chicago, I think, with Sam, and we went out. If you know Peter, he's not a small guy.
Okay.
And I don't think anybody will deny that he could crush you like a bug. And we went out to dinner at Morton's, and he ordered a 48-ounce steak and ate it. And so... Sam and I sat in awe of watching this, but I've told Peter this story. We used to use that when Sam would go through chemo and it would seem so hard. I would say to him all the time, "Do you remember the night that Peter Steigerwald ate that steak? Do you remember how he did it? He did it very slowly and in little bites. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to take this in little bites. You have to stop thinking about how long this is going to take and how sick you are. You just take it hour by hour and then we'll be okay." Those are my most immediate stories that I'll have. I'm sure I'll have more. There's so many things that I don't, people keep asking me, how did you guys meet? I'm not sure that story is right, but it's the one I'm going with right now.
Okay. Well, and no, obviously, I'm assuming you're one of the guys that made the webcomic for Heroes happen for Aspen in terms of them doing the art and everything.
Yeah. I mean, well, that was a pretty straight-ahead kind of thing. We were looking, again, for a small mom-and-pop place that could handle the kind of output that we were talking to. And I also, you know, I felt very strongly, given our friendship, that I wanted a revenue stream for those guys.
Okay.
And again, I remember exactly where I was standing when I was talking to the people at NBC about their deal. And then talking to Frank about how to make it all work. And they never missed a deadline. And then when we did, you know, because when you're putting out a weekly book, you don't always have the best chance to do your finest coloring, which is, I think, one of Aspen's strongest strengths. So when we did the collection, they went back and, for free, redid about 70% of the color in the book.
Wow.
So that it would have a consistent look through it. I'm really proud of that book. Not because I had a lot to do with it, because I really didn't. It was really mostly Aaron Colite and the aforementioned Joe Pekaski.
Okay.
I think this is the interview where, instead of you have to take a drink every single time I say Brian Michael Bendis, I think you have to take a drink every single time I mention Joe Pekaski's name.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for listening.
Which, by the way, at some point you need to get those two idiots on the show.
Aaron and Joe are
really sort of the future of comics. And look, if you could do me and Jesse Alexander, you could get anybody, I think. So.
That's true. No, I would like to, honestly. You know, and I know Aaron does stuff for comic book resources, and I don't think that would
well,
be...
Well, they both do. They do both.
Yeah,
they do this column called Behind the Eclipse.
Okay.
Which is their sort of version of Cup of Joe, where you can write in and get answers about what's going on. And I've insisted that they're so funny. I've insisted that they, when they answer the question, that they put their names next to it so that you know which one's talking.
Okay.
And I think that they don't want to show which one of them is smarter. I think they like the idea that it's sort of a mystery. It's sort of a mystery to me, actually, and I work with them every day. Those guys are in, you know, in so many ways the backbone of the show. And you need one of those, or if you're lucky enough to have two of them on any show, you want somebody who's thinking about it 24/7. I can't tell you the number of times that we've left the room at 6 or 7 o'clock without any idea as to how we're going to solve the problem. And they'll be IMing with each other until 1 and 2 in the morning, and then come in and say, well, what if we did this? Lord knows it makes my job a lot easier, which, at the end of the day, as you know, that's all that this is about.
Here, here. No, that's great. I would like to speak with them, and maybe off-season, because,
yeah, but
you know,
no one talks to them about their comic book work, which is just starting, because Aaron's arc right now on Ultimate X-Men is... this is all he's ever wanted to do, is write the X-Men. So being able to facilitate that, which was incredibly easy because they're so incredibly talented that as soon as they turned in their first script, everyone at Marvel was like, well, how do we get him to write 10 books?
Cool.
And then Joe is doing this Inhumans miniseries that spins out of Secret Invasion, which again was sort of his... proofing ground, and then Joe is taking over during Ultimatum. He's taking over Ultimate FF.
Oh, wow.
So with Brian doing Ultimate Spider-Man and Aaron doing Ultimate X-Men and Joe doing Ultimate Fantastic Four, you know, we're really trying to recreate that universe as something which is driven by kind of a single creative vision that we all share, so you're not doing these separate stories that you have no sense that the world is connected.
I see.
And so we all email with Bendis, and then the three of us are together every day, so we just share scripts and ideas, and I think there's just a much greater cohesiveness, which people will see, particularly during Ultimatum, much in the same kind of way that during any of these big secret invasion, you know, civil war, those kinds of crossovers where there's a mothership and then there's all these other stories that come out of it and are mm-hmm. happening simultaneously are much better when you can work with the mothership as opposed to, you know, here's what your story will be, and then you just let that person go off and tell that story. You know, it's how you wind up with, you know, I remember a lot of hoo-ha when the Spider-Man interface on Civil War was different than what was going on in the mothership.
Yes.
And, you know, again, that was one of those things where JMS was given kind of this is what it's going to be, but he didn't wait or take the time to work directly with Mark and some of that scheduling in order to sort of hook it up together. Whereas with Brian and Joe and Aaron, you know, we're all serving the mothership of Ultimatum and then the aftermath of that, and which is incredibly important that we figure out what we're going to do with all those books.
I know a retreat is coming up, and so is that your guys' opportunity through your editor or yourselves to kind of say, this is what we're doing, or does some of that, you know, plotting happen at the retreat as well?
No, absolutely. But, you know, Brian and I have a very, very specific vision as to what's going to happen in that world.
Okay.
If it exists at all. Da-da-da.
Exactly.
and so, yeah, we're all going to New York after San Diego.
Okay.
And unfortunately, Joe and Aaron can't go because
right.
someone has to stay and make heroes. So that'll be kind of a potboiler. We had one out here that was incredibly productive and actually really laid out an awful lot of Ultimatum. And so this particular one is sort of for us to come out and go, look, these are the things that we could do in the aftermath of this. And then we'll work very closely with Joe and Ralph. Ralph's our editor on the books, but in something like this where you're really rethinking what happened 7 years ago and what worked and what didn't work and how do we best take advantage of those things, Quesada has a really, really good perspective on that, and Dan Buckley will be there, and I'm sure, you know, with those kinds of things, you know, we'll drag Brevoort in and we'll drag Axel Alonso in. If for no other reason, I want to be able to say a year from now that it was their fault.
Their input that screwed up the story.
Exactly.
I
and then I think that there'll be some special guest stars that we'll drag in, but I don't think I'm allowed to talk about that. So,
no worries. I understand.
In the aftermath of it, I think we haven't really told people who was at the first Ultimatum West Coast version of it. Again, all people that I will blame if it didn't work.
Do you choose not to reveal those names now?
We specifically were told not to do
okay.
that.
Okay, all right then. Okay.
Because I guess at some point that will be explained to people. Given the pedigree of who's there, I'm sure everything that works will be, they'll get credited for, and everything that doesn't, I'll get blamed for. I literally... I don't often go online in order to look at how people are reacting, but I happen to stumble over a review of Cap White, and literally every single thing that this person had to say was, you know, given the amount of crap that Loeb is producing now, one person actually said, it makes me wonder whether or not Sale is co-writing it with him.
Oh, God.
That's nice. You know, that's the nature of the beast. You know, you can't.
Oh, yeah.
You can't be at the top and not expect people to throw rocks at you. I do miss the days when Tim and I were so far under the radar that no one really cared what we did.
Well, they were great. The color books are fantastic. I'm glad it's back. I want to talk. I do want to talk about that, but I wanted to just go a couple more things about Mike Turner. And one was,
sure,
you guys were rumored last year to be working on what started as Ultimate Wolverine, and then it became something else. Jonah Weiland, and I really want to mention this because it's a great interview, has an excellent video interview with
Mike.
Oh,
it's awesome. It's actually so powerful in terms of capturing Mike's. I literally sort of sat. It was like a movie moment, you know, on movies they all have. My new favorite show, largely due to Joe Pekaski introducing me to it, is Weeds. Which I hadn't really ever watched before.
It's a good show. I like that.
But
show
I got
too,
suckered into this ad campaign, which is Weeds and Secret Diary of a Call Girl. Who doesn't watch Secret Diary of a Call Girl, particularly when it's on Showtime? And it's the worst show ever. Like, ever. I look at it and I go, people exposed film for this? I don't even understand.
But I watched every episode, man.
No, I know. I watched the first one, and when she turned, she's really talented. But when she turned and talked to me, I was very uncomfortable. Don't talk to me on a television show. I would rather you did not. It's like whenever there's narration in a movie, you know it's a disaster.
Okay.
It basically means that it didn't work, and you need to sort of explain to the audience what's going on. But in this, for her to turn, I was like, okay, that's it. And the pilot is all about whether or not one of her Johns wants to be ridden like a horse. And I'm like, come on, guys. You know, couldn't you come up with something better than that? I remember, you know, I think I told you, there it is again, that one of my first jobs was working for Playboy and doing that television series up in Canada, which up in Canada was called Corporate Affairs and down here was called Office Girls, of course. And it was
yes.
a naughty 9-to-5. And this girl seduces, of all things, a priest. And it's so that they can, because the priest is trying to shut them down, so they send in the most beautiful, she was like Venus, you know, you couldn't resist her. And she climbs on top of him and says, have you ever, this is how great my dialogue was in when I was 21 years old. She said to him, have you ever been to outside the grocery store where they have those little mechanical ponies and you put a quarter in and then you can ride it.
Father.
And exactly. And this guy said, yeah, I know what you're talking about. And she said, well, I have a whole roll of quarters, and I'm going to ride you all night long. Now, how often do you get to actually deliver that line? That line is where Secret Diary of a Call Girl starts and falls off from that point.
Yeah, but
Weeds, in the exact opposite. Okay. I had never seen Weeds, and I was laughing so hard that my daughter came in and said, are you okay? And I then, wrote to Joe Pekaski and Aaron Colite, because they're always watching some television show that I've never heard of, which is probably the most brilliant thing in the world. Like, they introduced me to Mad Men. And every single time they talk about any show, the joke between us is, I say to them, is it like The Closer? Because The Closer is one of those shows that everyone talks about and they win awards and stuff. I don't even know where it's on. It's on like a network I've never heard of.
It's TNT.
I know, it's TNT. But I wouldn't know how to find it. I don't even know how to TiVo. So it's...
Do you stumble on it then when you see it? Or
The Closer? No, yeah. I just see the ads. They have more ads for The Closer than for anything else that I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, which I think is great. And then all I hear about is how everyone's watching The Closer. And so it's like whenever they go, you should see the show, you know, it's called Primeval. It's on the BBC. And I look at them and I go, is it like The Closer? And I've never seen an episode of The Closer. So when they were talking about Weeds, I'm so far off the point at this point. But anyway, when they're talking about Weeds, I'm laughing my ass off. And now I'm completely obsessed with the show. And now I've done the thing that you and I do. Why am I telling you this story? In the beginning of Weeds, in order to introduce her husband who has died, there's all this video footage that the youngest boy watches.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's heartbreaking because that's how you're introduced to the father. This is the same thing. I found this video that Jonah had put up that was this interview with Mike, and it was so Mike in a bottle.
Yeah.
You know, he was funny, and he was strong, and he was goofing around, and you can hear Vince, who's another one of the guys, like, cackling in the background, but I knew Mike at that point, and you can kind of tell how much pain he's in, because he really couldn't sit. Because of the way that his body was structured and all the things that are going on and are irrelevant now. But he never showed it. It was just the way that they were in this thing. And I literally am laughing and weeping at the same time that I'm watching this. And I actually wrote to Jonah and said, you have to somehow get this for me so I can watch it forever. That was Mike.
No, I hear you.
You know, if anybody ever wants to know what he was like, that's where it is.
Yeah, it really is great. And Jonah's a great guy and knows how to do wonderful interviews, and that's why I pointed it out. And it helped me understand Mike in a way, because I only knew him from afar. I only saw him
right.
at a couple of panels. And I can't remember if it was San Diego or Chicago last year when he kind of stuck his head at one of the panels and just kind of said hi. And it was either a Marvel panel or a DC Nation panel or something. But he was on his crutches, and everybody just, you know, immediately stood up and cheered, and he's like, you know, he's waving him off, like, relax, it's just me. You know, it was nice. It really, it was cool.
No, he, you know, he was incredible that way. I mean, he went to Wizard L.A., you know, as
the
late
spring.
As March. And,
yeah.
And he had no business being there, none. You know, he was really in so much discomfort, and yet he just showed up, and he was just like, because he had to be there for the fans.
Yeah.
And he always was one of those guys. Every time he made an appearance, had nothing to do with his own ego. He was there for people who really wanted to see him, and everyone knew. I mean, anyone who waited online knew. And he owned the conventions when he went. He would have the longest line. He would have, you know, whenever he sat down, it was a huge deal. And there were, you know, legends and people that were, you know, it wouldn't matter if you were, you know, doing, you know, Final Triple Crisis, because it was going to be the most important thing. And, you know, Mike would sit down with a sketch, and 93 million people would sit down and talk to him.
Wow.
But, yeah, we were going to do Ultimate Wolverine, and, you know, because of his schedule, it got pushed back for Soulfire. And then we had, at the last retreat, we had come up with this story, which I still may do. I'm just trying to figure out how to do it. And still sort of, because anybody who knows me knows that I'm going to lead with Mike was going to do this.
Okay.
So you kind of need to do it, you know, with Mike's heart in it. You can't just decide to do it for any other reason. Or I may never do that story because it was intended to do it with Mike.
Okay.
But there was that thing that, you know, and this was typical of Mike. We were going to do this Ultimate Wolverine story and had a lot of it worked out. But when that wasn't going to happen, largely because of things changed dramatically in Ultimatum, that story wouldn't have worked.
I see.
That he came back to me and he said, oh, that's good, because I really wanted to do Ultimate Wolverine, but I want to do something much bigger. I want to do something with every character in the Marvel Universe. And so we came up with it, and, you know, just basically the clock ran out. But he was talking to me about it. I went to see him in the hospital, and I brought him, you know, all these Joe Mad pages from Ultimates and all these pages from Ultimatum with Finch and all this Jessica Campbell Spider-Man stuff, and you know, I just looked at him and said, "Look, you got to get better so that we can, you know, do our thing. So we got to show everybody that these guys are hacks." And in fairness, they all know that. I think the world of them, but compared to Mike, they're hacks. We're all hacks compared to Mike. You know, I would use some sort of sports metaphor, but I don't know anyone in sports. I guess he was the Muhammad Ali of artists.
That'll work.
You know, it was just, I go with Babe Ruth, but well, I think most of the people listening to this don't know who Babe Ruth is. So.
They think it's the candy bar, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think they do. Or they think that I'm old enough to have actually seen Babe Ruth play, so either one. That'll be the kind of thing that, like, Joe Pacaski will come in on Monday morning and look at me and go, so you saw Babe Ruth play? And then I'll have to kill him.
Do you know, is Aspen going to...
I don't know what the plans are.
Okay.
I know that Frank has a plan. I have not had an opportunity to talk with them. I haven't really spent a lot of time with that gang because I'm trying to be very respectful to whatever. But Frank has,
sure,
has called me, and I think we're actually supposed to get together this week. And I don't know what we'll talk about, but I'm sure at some point I'll ask him what the plans are. I would think, knowing Mike and knowing Frank, it'll go on and continue to be successful. So,
okay,
that's that.
No, I understand. And that's the thing, man. I mean, it was as unfortunately when anything like this happens, it always comes, so suddenly, and everyone, you want to give everyone their time to mourn. And that's the thing, and that's one of the reasons why I stayed away from you guys as well. And I mean, I could see it at the convention, at the Wizards Chicago convention, when the news hit, and the Aspen guys obviously left as soon as they heard things were going bad, and then Jeff left John's Saturday morning once he found out. And I mean, there was this pall over the weekend, and then too, you can't help but think of last year when we all got back from Chicago, we heard about Mike Waringo passing away. And yeah, I mean, it's just it really was. It was tough, and you really felt the love for this guy at the convention and the loss that everyone was kind of sharing. Whether you knew him well or not, you could certainly, at the very least, sympathize with his friends and
look,
the people
in touch. In a very greedy way, I was so glad I was here because I don't know what I would have done had I been in with 10,000 people.
Sure.
I just wouldn't have wanted to deal with it in any way, shape, or form. And
yeah,
absolutely would have flown back. I probably would have flown back at the same time as the Aspen guys, who were only there for like 10 hours or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, sucks. Sucks living in a world without Mike.
I'm with you, man. Well, like I said, I mean, the thing to do is to appreciate the art that he produced and the work that he produced. And it's I am disappointed that I didn't have a chance to get to know him and speak to him. And I can tell from guys like you, how special of a guy he was. And again, that video interview, I think, with Jonah shows me the guy that has always been described to me by his friends and by the people that had the opportunity to have lengthy conversations with him. So, if you're curious, there is a place to go and really, beyond the art and get a glimpse, yeah, of the guy. So I suggest you seek that out. Well, let's, with the little time we have left, I wanted to mention the Heroes webisode. Do we need, more time than 10 minutes to...
No, I mean, I'll be perfectly honest. Jesse Alexander has really been riding shotgun on that.
Oh, okay.
So my involvement has been tangential in the way that, everyone on the show has their fingers in the pies. This has really been something that grew out of a number of conversations about making the webisodes tied into the general mythology, but I would feel much more comfortable if that was something that Jesse was, because he ran shotgun on that. And,
okay. Well, the only thing I want to pass on, because you'd understand the connection, is everyone is making the obvious line between Echo and Black Canary, but I think they're forgetting about the great Tyrock from the Legion of Superheroes. Come on.
Yeah, the funny part about it is I'm much more, it's much more like, first of all, everyone has one, but how you not draw the comparison to Banshee is the other
Banshee,
one.
Banshee, of course, yes.
But then it all sort of comes back to the fact that there is a Banshee. That's where it comes from.
Sure.
There is this, of Irish legend, there is this animal or creature or whatever the hell it was. I'm sure everyone who's Irish is now sitting there shaking their head going, it was a man! And it probably was. Certainly, I can see Joe Pacaski and Aaron Kolek shaking their heads like, what is he talking about? But why don't we just draw the line at a much more important thing, which is she's neither black nor a canary. Nor does a canary make a canary makes a very sweet little sound. You know, I don't understand. Like, people actually say she sings as sweet as a canary. That's actually an expression. So I don't think when you have a character's name for a superhero or supervillain, I don't think you want it to be ironic. I don't think that was what you set out to do. I don't think you call someone Superman when it's a woman who's weak.
Okay.
It doesn't make any sense to me. Or Batman is actually a dog.
Okay.
So, and you quote me on that. I never got Black Canary. Black Lightning, I understood. He's black, and he shoots lightning.
Yeah, but she didn't have the cry when she was first developed. She was just a Phantom Lady kind of femme fatale that looked hot in fishnets, which I'm all for. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but she didn't look like a canary there either. She didn't make a noise like a canary.
No, but she was probably blonde and hot, and that was, I guess, you know.
That's how you get to be named a canary? Okay.
I'm guessing. I don't know. I mean, I don't know who created Black Canary. I don't even know.
You know what? We should Google that.
That's a
or
good point.
Call Jonah, because I'm sure Jonah knows. the whole fishnet thing's like, who wears fishnets?
Well, that was back then, though, man. That was in the 40s.
But she's still wearing fishnets. I mean,
Well, so is Zatanna, and I'd rather see that than that crappy 80s, both of their crappy 80s costumes. Come on, man. Those suck.
Come on. But really, when you get it down to it, there was really nothing better than that white jumpsuit that Wonder Woman ran around in.
Well, that's a good point, too.
No, they all have, at a certain point, you know, the bat armor and,
yeah.
You know, there's, every character at some point has really stupid clothes.
Blue
I'm
Superman.
Sure I've done it to some character.
Oh, yeah. No, well, you know.
I'd love for someone to be, you know, at this point going, oh, yeah, I love the why does, I don't know, name the person. There's another one, Siren. She's another one that has that sonic scream.
Oh, and then we Joan Collins on the Batman show? Is that what you're saying, Siren?
No, she sang. See, now that I get. If Black Canary had the Siren's powers, which was that she sang and men fell in love with her, I have to digress. I don't think I've ever told this story. No, I have. I told you that the first time I ever understood the power that women have over men, I was like 10, and I didn't know it was Joan Collins. I just saw this woman come out in a silver miniskirt, and I was
looked
like,
hot as hell, yeah.
Whoa. I feel a tingling down in my nethers. And I actually was at a party. Jack Coleman, who plays HRG on the show,
yep.
Had a birthday party, and because he was on Dynasty a million years ago,
right.
Joan came.
That's cool.
And you have to understand, you know, she's older than 39,
yes.
But she looks exactly like she did when she was 39. I mean, she's still hot. And so I told Dennis Hammer, who's one of the executive producers on the show, who had worked with her, I told him this story about how, you know, she essentially made me a man without ever meeting me.
Yes.
And he said, you have to go over and tell her this story. And I'm like, I don't know the woman at all. And he said, no, you have to go over. She'll love hearing this story. So I go over and tell her the story, and she looks at me with a kind of look that says, that's really nice, Sonny. You have no idea how many men I've actually... boys I've turned into men.
Truly turned into men.
So you're in a phone book of people. It was so interesting that you told me this story. And I sort of, you know, slithered away. And Dennis, of course, came up to me afterwards like, well? And I'm like, Dennis, I think you knew that I was just going to go and get completely embarrassed by this. If Black Canary, how did we get on this?
No,
if Black Canary made that noise that made men fall in love with her,
that would make sense
to me, because
sure.
It would be a sweet noise.
Right.
I remember we did it on Smallville, and I also remember that it was a disaster, because the script came in and it was horrible, and we had to, It was one of those things where it was so bad that we moved it later in the show because we didn't want it to be in the first whatever. And Mark Verheiden, who I adore, and wrote some of the best episodes of that show, and then has since gone on and done gigantic work on Battlestar.
Yes.
And I've tried like hell to get him to come over to Heroes, and he's sort of gone, well, maybe. and he had the unfortunate task of going in and trying to right the ship that was listing in a way. It was taking on so much water that, you know, all you could do was hope that you could save your hats.
So was there a Canary story in Smallville before the sixth season, or was there?
Oh yeah, no. This was like in the second season, or maybe the third season.
Was that the one with what's your face?
It wasn't. No. That was. You're confusing things. You're thinking of Birds of Prey, where Lori Loughlin came on.
I remember. But no, I was going to ask if it was Clooney's old girlfriend. I always forget her name. The woman who played Emmanuel, when she was the hot teacher. Is that what you're talking about?
She was Heat.
Yes, Heat. That's the
right.
Yes.
And actually, I think Verheiden wrote that episode.
Okay.
She was so hot. I was so sad Krista that we kicked her off the show.
Or Krista Allen. Yeah, she was gorgeous. My God. Still is, I'm sure. I'm sure she still is.
Yeah.
But no, that was a great episode.
But no, she didn't have anything to do with. I don't understand. She didn't make a noise.
Okay, no.
What's
but
wrong with you?
I thought she was seducing men with.
Pheromones.
Yes.
That was
okay.
The whole thing. Yeah,
gotcha.
She put out something that was couldn't resist.
So there was someone with the Canary Cry on Smallville before.
There was. It was actually a father and a son, I think, and the son had the power, and the father was abusing him to make him be a robber.
Oh, okay.
But his voice was so loud that it could hurt Clark.
Okay.
And I think Clark went deaf for the episode. Or no, it was even better. He went blind. That was the best.
I remember that now.
It was literally our finest hour. Yeah. Guys have been able to shout, Black Bolt.
Yes, of course. Yes. Well,
I think we've continued the long tradition of people trying to accuse us of taking something that I can give you 93 examples of.
No, that's cool. I appreciate it. Like I said, the Tyrock came to mind, and then of course I thought of the Ultimates right now because I was thinking the new Valkyrie has raided Tyrock's closet for outfits because it pretty much is the same outfit. It looks better on her. Don't get me wrong.
Well, she's just wearing which one? The Valkyrie. One that Hitch did.
Yeah,
where she wears the disc.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay. We got. Are you reading Ultimates?
I am, sir. I've got. Well, yeah. I guess you did too. Well, it kind of.
No. There is a flashback in the current one.
That's what I was thinking of.
Then what are you doing? You're just flipping through the book. You're not actually reading.
No. I am reading the book. I'm aware of her relationship with Thor.
There's a whole mystery because this was a 19-year-old girl who didn't have any powers. Now she's got powers.
Now all of a sudden, well, dude, you've got a million mysteries going on in Ultimates 3 that are pissing people off, but that's because they're anxious and they want everything spoon-fed immediately, whereas adults will wait and hear the rest of the story.
Well, I used to make fun, and people are going to burn me at the stake, but I used to make fun of Mark all the time that nothing would happen in that book. And until 5 issues, and then all of a sudden there would be a big fight.
Right.
But, in fairness, he was building. He did all the hard work. He spent 2 years developing all the characters, and then I get to play with him now. It's sort of the same way when you go on a television show in the second season, which is, I did that on Smallville and I did that on Lost. You know, those guys, they did all the hard work. They introduced everybody. They saw what worked and what didn't work. And then... the first year is the hardest year, and so the first year on a book is the hardest year, because everyone is sitting around going, really? That's what you've chosen? I just get to run around with them now.
Well, yeah, and you got robots running around, and I appreciated the little Terminator allusion to come with me if you want to live.
If you're going to have a robot, he might as well say that at some point.
And we don't know who's running the robots and how these guys got replaced. I like that.
And all that stuff, believe it or not, gets wrapped up in the next issue.
There you go.
At about a million miles an hour. There are a couple things that we had to leave out, and we'll pick up... We're going to do two annuals, one which is an Ultimate Hulk annual, which will explain where Zarda has been, because she came over at the end of Ultimate Power but hasn't shown up.
I was going to ask about that.
Well, I couldn't really have Captain America stop in the middle of Ultimates 3 and go, Zarda's not here right now. But we'll get back to that at some point. And then the other is we're going to do a Captain America annual, which will talk a lot more about his friendship with the Black Panther and where that started, and tell the origin of Ultimate Black Panther, which is I'm actually kind of delighted by it. It's very different from what they did in the Marvel U, and I think one of the things that the Ultimate Universe should do more of, which is to take the kind of core of what it is that these characters are and then give them some new bend in the road that you couldn't have done in 1964 when Stan and Jack created all this stuff.
Very cool. Non-comparisons to Black Canary aside. I guess the webisodes start this week for Heroes.
Again, taking aside from the fact that you shouldn't be talking to anything about this, the one thing I have seen them, and they're really kind of extraordinary because they obviously don't have the budget that we have. It's like a small independent film when Heroes, the show, is like this $100 million blockbuster. They're now $300 million blockbusters.
Wow.
So the fact that Yul, who is the sort of the other driving force, he's the director and one of the writers, but they're really quite slick. I think the reason why they're so important as well is, unless I'm mistaken, this is the first webisode that was created after the strike. So the people that are involved are all involved under the new terms that were created. And so NBC has really worked very hard to make this an event. And I think that's why everyone has heard about them. And I think we'll be driven to NBC.com in order to see these things, which I believe start on July 14th.
Yep.
Which is Monday.
That's right.
And they're very clever pieces that you can watch over and over and over again. And will tie into our mythology, as people will see. Everything does in the same kind of way the comics do. But we'll also give you an opportunity to sort of tool around in the NBC.com area that's designed for Heroes, because that way you'll get to see the comics and you'll get to see interviews with people. And I'm very, very happy with the promos that people have been doing. People have been stopping me all over the place, like dry cleaner, the bank, and somebody yesterday, where they go, I went for a haircut. Believe it or not, I still get haircuts. And the woman there was like, oh, I saw the thing. And I guess people have been watching Wimbledon and they've been watching Dateline. And there's been just these little teaser ads that are like 30 seconds. And they're on the site. So there's kind of a historical importance, if I'm not putting too much importance on it, in the sense that, like I said, these are the first guild-sanctioned
episodes.
Which kind of allow for, you know, if you believe that members of the Writers Guild have a higher quality of writing than, you know, somebody who isn't, that's, you know, an opportunity to see what you can do if you let the big boys come in and play.
Well, and also to show the people that didn't understand or at least didn't believe that the writers deserved a piece of this pie. I mean, this is a chance to really support these guys and show up for these web episodes as well and, you know, generate some numbers showing that the interest is there. And really, I mean, this is the baby steps that are leading to where media is going.
It is absolutely a tie to the future. When you look at these things, which are only a few minutes long, it's only, and then there's a bunch of them. So all you have to do is string them together and you have a half hour of television.
Sure.
So if that's what they were going to do anyway, to then say, well, we were never going to do that, so we never had to pay you, it's just ludicrous. And and again, everybody knows, I was against the strike. I would not have run it the way that it was run. But I understood the reasons for it. Mm-hmm. I just would have been the guy that, you know, my way of dealing with it is, and I wasn't in charge, and so I don't know that this was possible, and I'm very grateful that everyone did what they needed to do. But the whole notion that we stopped negotiating because they wouldn't negotiate or we wouldn't negotiate, I just would have taken a room at the Holiday Inn and called a press conference every day and said, I'm here. I'm here, and I want to negotiate today. And anything that's happening strike-wise or shutting down the town, it's their fault. But I don't understand really what happened. And we're very far away from telling people that they should watch the webisodes on NBC.com. They go up on July 14th.
Yep.
It is got a historical precedence to them. You're looking at the future. And even if you look at it and go, well, you know, it's not, it doesn't have the big glory of the television show. Yeah, guess what? You know, it is a baby step towards that. And I think they're terrific. And everyone involved did an amazing, amazing job on very little to make it with.
Well, other than other than the reality shows, I mean, this is what we got to watch, so this is good. I'm happy to have some fresh programming, even just a couple minutes of Heroes as we wait for the.
You have Weeds and Mad Men's coming back.
That's
and
true.
If you are really looking for a show besides The Closer, which also starts, I would write to Joe Pekaski at Behind the Cliffs at CBR, which we're not supposed to plug because we're on a different network.
That's right.
But if you write to him and ask, what should you be watching during the summer, my guess is he's going to give you a really, really good idea. And that's as good a place to stop as any.
All right, fair enough, man. And we still have Red Hulk and Cap White.
We do. We have all kinds of colors to talk about.
Indeed. But we will pick up this conversation where we left off on our next chapter, as we always do. This is good, man. I like our road episodes. We're like Hope and Crosby. This is when, this is when,
and,
like...
And you know what's great about it is everyone is listening to it going...
Who?
Hope who?
Yeah,
is that like a woman's name?
Yeah.
it's a woman named Hope and Bill Cosby.
Yes, exactly. but you and I know, and that's the important thing. But no, it was a pleasure, man, and thank you, and we will pick up the conversation shortly.
Thanks, Jeff. Take good care, and I guess this is the part where I get to say, you've been listening to Word Balloon. It's the only place where you get to talk to professionals in the entertainment industry and in the comic book world and in the graphic novel world in an intimate and yet provocative surrounding. This has been Word Balloon. We're a division of a large corporation who paid for the thing.
Got to hire that guy to be a booth announcer. Thanks to Jeff Loeb for coming on, talking about his friend Mike Turner and some of the projects that he has in the basket. The books we didn't talk about, Captain America White, Issue Zero, came out last week. A good preview of what's to come in the winter when he and Tim Sale pick that story up. Also, The Hulk Continues, or I should say Hulk, him and Ed McGuinness continuing the mystery and adventure of the Red Hulk. Who is he? I guess we'll find out by the end of the first miniseries. And the aforementioned books, The Ultimates Volume 3, Issue 5, is coming out soon. And then, of course, leading to Ultimatum, the big event. We'll see what Jeff and Bendis have in store for us as the Ultimate Universe comes to a shattering climax. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. We were talking about Michael Turner. There's some good examples of his work available for you at a reduced rate at InStockTrades.com. For example, Soulfire, co-written with J.T. Kroll and Jeff Loeb. Volume 1 of Soulfire for just $10.49. Or the trade paperback of Superman Batman Volume 2, which collects the Supergirl story from Jeff Loeb and Mike Turner. That's just $8.18 at InStockTrades.com. Don't forget, orders over $50 receive free shipping. And don't forget about their sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, for your monthly pre-order needs, where you'll get books every month from major publishers that range between 35 and 75% off the cover price. For more details, visit the sites InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service, DCBService.com. Thanks again for listening. John Suntress saying, don't forget, Word Balloon is all over the internet. We're at Newsarama.com. We're at iTunes. You can find us at our own site, WordBalloon.com, where you can also find an archive with well over 100 other interviews featuring some of your favorite creators going way back to the Silver Age all the way till today. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, reach me via email, john@WordBalloon.com. Thanks for listening. More coming up in the weeks ahead and more of the Loeb Report, as promised. in the days and weeks ahead. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2008.